Welcome to On the Mic Podcast. This is your host, Tim Drake. On today's episode, I have writer, producer, actress, comedian, beatboxer, Janine Hogan. I was very excited to finally get a chance to talk to Janine and get to know her. Currently, we're working on our new feature horror film, Demonetized, together that Janine co-wrote alongside my producing partner, Watson. And she's also one of the stars of the film. And we've only kind of crossed paths via Zoom in a few meetings. And I've always known about Janine as a comedian around Los Angeles. And so now I figured it was no time better than now to get to know her. And so it was really fun to sit down. As I started to ramp up new episodes, Janine was one of the first people I immediately thought of. Because, again, we're working on a movie together. And I kind of like to know the people I work with. And so I was very excited to sit down and talk with Janine. I've always just heard such great things about her. And she lived up to every one of those things during this episode. I talked a lot with her about growing up in Florida, being a class clown. Working on Expedition Bigfoot for Discovery. Very fun to chat about Bigfoot. Of course, if you listen to my other show, The Watson and I Do The Void Unknown, we recently did an episode about Bigfoot. And so it was kind of fun to get Janine's take coming from the other side of that. Also talked about working as the head writer of the Nickelodeon show The Substitute, a prank show that they get celebrities to essentially come dressed in disguise and be substitute teachers for the day. A very, very funny show. Her appearance on the floor is lava, as well as her comedic inspirations. Also beatboxing, because, again, so many people put all their different things that they do in their bios, you know, actress, writer, producer. Beatboxer is the last thing I would ever expect to see. And so it was really fun finding out how Janine got into beatboxing, working, even using that as well for Drop the Mic. Very fun conversation with Janine. It was so great getting to know her. I think you guys are really going to enjoy this episode. Make sure to please go follow Janine on all the social media pages that are on our website so you can keep up with everything she's doing, as well as find out what's coming up next for Demonetized. We're very, very excited to be making this film. A lot of pieces are coming together right now, getting our cast lined up, and I'm very excited to start shooting our second feature film later this year. It's going to be a good time. We are incredibly excited about this. There's going to be a bonus episode coming up this week as well with my good friend, actress, and author Sarah Hamilton. She has a big book signing coming up this week here in Los Angeles at the Barnes & Noble over at the Grove. So we'll be chatting with her later this week as well, so you can learn more about Sarah. So stay tuned for that bonus episode coming up later this week. But for now, enjoy this episode with Janine Hogan. Please go give her a follow. Check out all of the awesome things that she does. If you're here in Los Angeles, go to her website that you'll be able to find the link to on our website as well to find out all of her comedy dates. She performs pretty much every weekend, it seems like. So definitely get out there and check out all that Janine is doing. Thank you guys for listening. Hope you guys enjoy this episode. We'll see you next week. So I'm glad that we were able to make this work, because I started bringing the show back around. You were one of the first people that came to mind. I was like, I hear Janine's name all the time. I'm working on Demonetized with you now. And I'm like, I've talked to Janine maybe twice now, like in passing.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, I hear Watson talk about you all the time. I was like, I need to actually get to know Janine. And it's LA, so what better way to do it than a podcast? So
yeah, that's kind of the only way. If you asked me to get lunch or coffee, I'd be like, let's record it.
Yeah, if it's not recorded, it didn't happen. So so now how did you and Watson get to know each other? I've never been clear on that. I knew you guys were roommates, but I never knew where that kind of fell into play.
We've never been roommates.
Never been roommates. I made this up in my head entirely. I thought you guys were roommates after a bit. So how did you guys get to know each other?
We initially met, I have a terrible memory, so he has a much better memory of it than I do, but we initially met on a shoot for some MTV like prank show where we were basically like plants. Like we were at like some poetry reading or something, and they were gonna come in and do a prank or whatever, and we were supposed to be like, whoa, my God, what the heck? And we both were there, and the part of it was that they would come into the poetry reading and start like dancing with us, and they were like, are you okay if like people like dance on you? And we were like, yeah, sure, whatever. And I was like, okay, yeah. So they start coming in, they start messing with us, and they're doing I can't remember the name of it. It's a Jamaican dance where basically you just violently hump each other. I wish I could remember the name of it right now, but so they're doing that, and I was like, okay, yeah. So this guy my chair and like leans me back to do it, but the chair falls out from under me, so
Oh
I just get body slammed onto the ground on
no.
camera. Body slammed onto the ground on camera. And I was like, I think my glasses came off. It was so funny and dramatic. And so that was our first interaction with each other. And I believe me and Watson both never got paid for that shoot. I think we just never got our money.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so. But that was his first interaction with me, is seeing me get basically tackled by a stranger.
Well, if there's not a better way to meet than a podcast, it's a shoot gone wrong in
Yeah,
in LA. So
pretty much.
that's a funny way. I don't know why I thought you guys were roommates. That is so funny. I think I just you guys did that that pilot pitch together.
Yeah.
Wally and the Beaver, is that what it was?
Eddie and the Beaver,
Eddie and the
yeah.
Beaver. Wally and the Beaver, that's Leave It to Beaver. But he showed me that, and I think somehow that somehow just crossed through, and that must have been where
Yeah.
that you guys had been roommates. But as we've kind of started working on Demonetize, it's been really fun to like see the way that you two have worked together on this. We've talked a little bit about it. So right as everything started picking up, all the strikes started, and so we really couldn't say anything about it. So, but you're going to be one of the stars of the movie. So, and you're the writer and a producer on it. So, it's something I've known the little bits and pieces I've known about you. You are very good at wearing a lot of
Thank you. I will take that compliment.
hats.
I try. I feel like you kind of have to in this world. Everybody's like a multi-hyphenate. But yeah, I mean this he obviously you guys were working on Bundy Manor, and I knew about that, and he sort of was like, what's next? You know, what do we want to work on? He reached out to me and was like, hey, would you want to do something like comedic? And I was like, fuck yeah, absolutely. And so yeah, we just started writing this, developing this, because we had developed stuff before, like we had developed Eddie and the Beaver, and which was so fun, and that still is a dream project that if they were like, hey, you could do whatever you want, I'd definitely bring Eddie and the Beaver to the table, and I'd be like, well, let's talk about this one because it's so fun. It's so fun and so silly, and I think such a cool, unique idea. So we've always like developed stuff together, and then yeah, decided to work on this and developed it together, and sort of we're like a good writing team because we like fully trust each other. So we swap back and forth, and it's not. I'm pretty sure we've only ever had one time where we had a disagreeing creative choice, and it was like literally like 2 weeks ago. And then by the end of the conversation, I was like, you know what? Actually, you're right. Yeah, I'm wrong. So it's a good duo for sure. And I love him. He's great.
That's how I felt like my working relationship with him has always been too, is we get along so incredibly well. But then like when we first started working on Bundy Manor, we had a long chat where we had to be like, we need to learn to just like call a timeout, because sometimes we would almost like get into an argument and we're basically saying the exact same thing and we're just saying it different. And so we like
Yeah.
and now it's like, yeah, we never there was a clip from Welcome to Wrexham where Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds are sitting on the couch, and Rob's like, yeah, I mean, I'm immediately just like, yeah, they can just fuck off. And then Ryan's like, well, hang on. Like, and I recorded it and I sent it to Watson. I was like, oh my God, it is like our dynamic to a T. Because I'm just like, fuck off, move along. He's like, well, let's make sure that they should tell him to fuck off. Like,
Yeah, I think it's also, I mean, I'm gonna hype him up, obviously, but I love Watson. He's such a good, like, nice, pure man that, yeah, you're never gonna be able to get into a fight with him because he's too nice.
And he's one of the most understanding people I
Yeah.
know. He always just wants to make sure, like, let's make sure we're on the right page.
Yeah,
That's
for
what
sure.
this completely has just changed to the Watson podcast, where we're going to spend the next
I
hour
know, just
just
hyping
praising
up Watson.
Watson. Yeah.
We're gonna be like, hey, did you listen to the episode? He's like, no, I'm not listening
Yeah.
to that episode. And we're like, 45 minutes of it is us praising you. So
He's like, I talked to you guys enough. I don't need to hear both of you talk.
To each other, yeah.
It's cool that all of this stems from you guys just essentially in a background gig, starting to develop and work together. Where did your background kind of start? Did you grow up in LA, or where did you grow up at?
No, I grew up mostly in South Florida, and I was there sort of after high school. I was like class clown, and after high school, I was like, oh, the thing that I'm supposed to do is like funny videos. Like, this is what's next. And so I would do like public pranks, like messing with people in Walmart and the mall, like the most cliche teenage stupid shit. But I would always have friends like that would need to like help me film it and whatever. And I'd be like, I had the realization where I was like, oh, everyone sucks at this. So I guess I have to learn how to do this. And so I started doing like music videos, event recaps. I did one wedding, just to sort of teach myself like how to make stuff. And I had sort of a little business going in South Florida of video production of different kinds, just because I literally was like, I want to know how to do this, so I'm just gonna direct shitty rap videos for people. And so then, yeah, and I sort of just at some point was like, okay, I want to work on bigger stuff. I did the cliche, move to LA. Never been here, sleep on a couch for months, get upgraded to a air mattress, get upgraded to an actual room, like the most cliche story. And I sort of came over here, and my initial thought is I was like, oh, I'm gonna be a cam op. I'm gonna be a cam op for Travel Channel. I'm gonna travel. I'm gonna get to do all kinds of cool stuff, whatever. And then I spent about 5 minutes in the industry, and I was like, I don't want to be a cam op. That's They got to carry a lot of stuff, and I don't want to carry stuff. So I initially started in post. My first job was actually American Ninja Warrior, which is very fun. And so I came up in post, develop, you know, started getting into production and or producing and developing, and now I've sort of landed in the world where I write, quote unquote, unscripted. And usually heavily comedic stuff. So I've done like prank, I've done which is ironic because I used to get suspended in school all the time for pranking people. And then I was like, I literally just made John Cena do the most insane thing I've ever done, and made money for it. So that was like a dream job. And then yeah, I produce unscripted, and I try very hard to keep it as comedic as I possibly can, when I can.
So what now coming from Florida, so how long did it take you there before you said you realized, hey, I want to take the stab at the LA thing? How long was it after graduating high school that you finally did take the jump to moving to LA?
It was like almost 3 years.
Okay.
So it was like two and a half, almost 3 years. I dabbled in college, community college a little bit. It's not really something that we necessarily need in this world. And so I just bailed on it, dropped out, and was like, I'm gonna just do it. Which is always fun because every time I say that to someone who's like very successful and has like an amazing degree, they're always like, good for you, good for you. And I'm like, nice, all right, cool. I mean, it could have gone very badly, but it ended up working out, so I'll take it. But yeah, so it was like 3 years, and then I just moved to LA and was like, fuck it.
Yeah, you just have to dive in. And I had a friend that said it the best way possible, because he didn't go to college at all and just jumped in, like immediately starting PA work. And he had just said, I could get paid to do it, or I could pay someone to learn how to do it. I'd rather get paid
Yeah.
to do it than have all the student loan debt. And then as he's saying this, I'm like, yeah, student loan debt. Yeah, I should have thought of it that way as well. And so now it's like working at a major studio, I do have people that like they'll bring their kids through and they're like, oh, well, so what advice do you have? And I'm always like, don't go to film school. So
Don't go to college.
figure it out. Like, just keep making shit. And it's like, I'm very pro higher education, but at the same time, like, yeah, you don't need it really for
Not for this.
film school. Like, now you
Yeah.
can kind of figure it out. And like, when I went to Second City, I got 10 times more out of my first year at Second City than I ever did.
going through film school because it was, even though it still was learning, it was like, oh, this is how this shit actually starts to come together. It all started to kind of click a little bit more than watching a million people figure out how to just do the most basic thing on a DSLR camera.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's like there's some people where I'm like, okay, you made good connections from that. You went to like a good school. And I'm like, but do I want to pay $100,000 to like know someone? I think I'm gonna grind and figure it out on my own.
Yeah, and for you, that is definitely because I mean, as we've been working on Demonetize and Watson and I are pitching names back and forth, a lot of the times we're like, oh, wait, doesn't Janine know so and so? And we always kind of go back to that well. So it's like, yeah, you could pay that 100 grand to know a couple people, but I mean, you're living proof of you went for it. And I mean, you've become a major resource even for us to reach out to people because of those connections you've made just doing it.
Yeah, just like kind of jumping in and doing different things for fucking years and trying it all and being like, hopefully someday some of this really works out for me.
I think we can say it definitely has been working out for you. And I mean it is a huge risk to take, especially I mean for you moving cross country. Watson and I had to move 700 miles. I mean you came clear across the country and like I mean sleeping on couches. Watson and I, you know, we had to do the very methodical like plan out, like we have to say like we didn't have to go through the grind quite that you did. But I love the thought of, you know, oh, I can work in camera and then just like no.
Yeah, I
So
was like,
often people are like, have you ever done grip work? And I'm like, no,
no.
I'm too fragile for that.
Yeah, no way.
Like these hands are not baby soft because I have done grip work. Like I
Yeah.
talk to guys all the time, I'm like, yeah, I could not even fathom having to do that for an hour, let alone 12,
13.
15, like.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is incredibly, incredibly tough work.
Yeah.
So now you mentioned writing with Unscripted. You've worked on some very fun shows. One that had really caught my attention was the Bigfoot show.
I knew it. I knew you were going to say that. Everyone says that. It's crazy how I, even like parents or family members or whatever, where I'm like, oh man, I was head writer on 2 seasons of this Nickelodeon prank show. No matter what, everyone wants to talk about Bigfoot. No matter what. And I get it. It's fun. It has been, I just wrapped on another season of it. Truly an insane world. Undeniably hilarious, but not on purpose. Like, it's there's jobs where I'm meant to write comedy, and there's jobs where this shit is funny and I have to pretend like I'm taking it seriously.
With one of the other shows that Watson and I host together, The Void Unknown, we've did an episode on Bigfoot. So it has been something that always is just fascinating when we're like, dude, like is it just some big hairy dude or what is this? So it is that I think that's why it catches everybody's eye probably is because it's like you've done some really rad shit but
I
Bigfoot.
know. Yeah, everyone's like, yeah, sure, whatever, whatever. But you worked on a Bigfoot show. And I'm like,
Like
yeah, I talked to the most insane people on the planet and heard grown men cry to me on Zoom about how scared they are of their Bigfoot experience. And I want so badly to be like, see a doctor. But instead, I have to be like, thank you so much for sharing your story. I'm going to put you on TV. And it's like, it's insane. It's truly been like an insane thing. And I just finished season 5, so I've somehow kept circling back to it over the years.
What is the process like on that of trying to find people to be on the show and to just kind of write and structure a show like that?
It's so the sh this show itself, it's called Expedition Bigfoot. I know all the fans are gonna want to go run and watch that. And the premise, because obviously there's a million Bigfoot shows, Bigfoot movies, Bigfoot documentaries, whatever. The premise that they tried to do with this to make it more unique is we use like large, heavy technology pieces. So we'll use like, a monitoring blimp. We used some border patrol technology that the Department of Defense uses. Like we use insane big tech in this weird way of looking for Bigfoot. So my job basically has been to help come up with those weird ways, and then get in touch with them, and somehow convince them to let us use it on a Bigfoot show. So it's a lot of there's a fun moment where I'm like talking to someone. I'm like, yeah, we're doing a series. It's on Discovery Channel this season, da da da, this and that, blah blah blah. And then there's a moment where I'm like, and you know, we're using it in this really interesting different way, which is like really fun. So yeah, we're actually gonna be using it to research Bigfoot. And then I have to pause. I have to have a moment of pause to see how they react. Because if they laugh, I know it's ridiculous, it's crazy, but it's a fun way to show your tech. And if they're like, wow, that's really cool, I'm like, yeah, it's honestly kind of groundbreaking. Honestly, pretty big deal. Pretty big deal that we're doing this. So I have to be fake as fuck, but I have had conversations with some insane, the witnesses are the most fun aspect of it, for sure. Fun and also scary.
Has there ever been one of the witnesses that their story or something is just so out there that you guys have been like, I cannot air this at all? Or do you
constantly
crazier the best?
Constantly, every single season. And we have to find that fine line of like too wacky, too crazy, and like we could make this work. When people are like too crazy, we're like, we can't. But you know, there's this lady who said that she had sex with Bigfoot and it ended her marriage. It's like, we're not putting that lady on TV. No one's gonna take us seriously with that. But yeah, it's finding that fine line of someone who's like just sane enough to be believable on TV that we're sort of like, okay, maybe they have a little bit of credibility.
So with 5 seasons of it, where do you stand at this point on the talks of Bigfoot? Is it
0%? Yeah, it's a zero. It's 100% fake. There's just 0% chance. Anything that anyone has found, you know, we got to make a TV show. That's all that I'll say is that there's got to be stuff to find.
Yeah, you know? With the Void Unknown, Watson and I went through a handful of different things of footage to be like, all right, is this? And it's like, there's some good footage out there where it's like, I don't know, but we've never found anything that we felt was definitive enough to be like, yeah, that's Bigfoot, that's Sasquatch.
No, I can promise you that it's not, and it never is. Unfortunately, when I first started on the show, like my first week, like development season one, I didn't know about big. I mean, everyone knows about like Bigfoot, but I didn't know about like the lore and what people, you know. So I was deep diving into Bigfoot world, and I just did that for like a week straight, all day. And by the end of the week, I was like, guys, I don't know, like this kind of like this could be real, right? Like, do we think that there is like actually Bigfoot? Like, this is kind of crazy. And then I was like, okay, now let me look at stuff that's not made only by Bigfoot people to persuade you. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, it's absolute bullshit. But for the first like week, I'm like consuming all this Bigfoot stuff, yeah, watching this footage, and I'm like, guys, I don't know. Like, is the big guy out there for real? And then I was like, oh, okay, no, yeah.
But maybe season six, maybe that'll be the one.
I mean, that's sort of the thing, is every season we almost get them all this close. We're this close, but definitely come back next season and we're going to get them then. We almost did. And it's that for years.
So one of these times it'll work.
So well, now, you know, we need to still make a show. So yeah, probably not.
And unless you find them, unless
I'm out of a job.
Exclusive. I mean, that'll be bigger than Oprah and Meghan Markle. I mean, you guys get to sit down with Bigfoot.
Yeah, but it'll be good. But then there wouldn't never be a season six, because we'd be like, we found him. Honestly, he's kind of chill. We just chatted with him.
You guys could reverse, and it could be hiding Bigfoot, where you have to put him back out there and then let the next group come in and find
him.
Yeah,
like he sort of shows us his ways and how he's like, you know, dodged us for years.
Another show that it made me laugh when I saw this, because in the pandemic, I tried to develop a scripted show, but you did some on the floor as lava.
Did
during the right as the pandemic started, I was trying to do a show with one of my producing partners, because a show that we were in pre-production on came to a screeching halt with us all locked down. And I was like, I have to make something. And so I was like, what if it's like, we have to shoot this in like isolation. What if it's that a game of the floor of lava got out of control? And so everybody has to stay inside. And very much like him and like a few others were like, that's so stupid. I was like, I know, that's why it's funny. Like let's go.
Yeah.
And we still did something somewhat with that, but the floor of lava was thrown right out there. And then like 3 months later, I'm driving down Sunset and there's a billboard for the floor is lava. And I was like, it was within the zeitgeist.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually was on it. I was a contestant on it, which was very fun. It was truly insane. We filmed in the old Burbank IKEA. They built all the sets in there. So that was also a wild experience. But we knew why we were there. It was two comedians, and we went up against rock climbers and firefighters. So we very much knew that we weren't there to win. We were there, we were there to do some chuckles.
Yeah.
And so we didn't really go into it being like, this is, I mean, we honestly went into it and we're like, I don't know, I think we could. And then once we started, we were like, we definitely cannot.
it has to be one of those things that everybody watches like, yeah, I could do that. I mean, same with American Ninja Warrior. Watch how many people sit at home with that and they're like, I can definitely do that. I'm like, yeah,
yeah,
I made the first jump and missed it by 2 feet and been out within 30 seconds.
Dead. Yeah. I like whenever, because people watch it and there's, I don't know if you've seen it, but there's a point where I like slip off of like a spinning bed. And I always am like, anytime I talk to someone, I'm like, the lava is lube based. The lava is based on lube. So it's very slippery. I need everyone to know it is insanely slippery. We're basically jumping around in lube. Because everyone's like, oh, I don't get it. You slipped right off, da da da. And I'm like, yeah, people broke ribs. Okay, it was hard. It was hard.
Yeah, they are far harder than any just normal person could begin to fathom. And it always cracks me up listening to the people that think that they could just do it so easily.
I really hope you do, because. And then, so the lava itself is lube-based because it had to be, like, completely safe for humans to ingest, because we had to go fully underwater, under the lava stuff, to play. They played up basically that we, like, die. So our partner on the team has, like, a big meltdown of, like, no! It's, like, their silly shtick. So we have to go all the way under and dunk, which is not fun. I don't know if you've ever submerged your whole body in lube.
No, I can't say I have.
Try it. It's not the best time. So then you get out and there's PAs who literally just come and squeegee you. They squeegee your arms, they squeegee your legs, and they're like trying to get you to have the least amount of basically lube on you. And then you go take an ice cold shower in the old IKEA and you question your life choices and you think, maybe I could have been like a decent chiropractor, you know?
Who do you think is questioning their choices more though? The contestant that had to do that or the PA who is having to squeegee the lube off of the contestants?
I'm gonna have to say the PA. I guess they said they went through 200 towels per day.
Jeez.
And I know some poor PA has to drop those off somewhere to be cleaned, so
there's some
I'll take being
delivery
the one
that's like, we got the lube towels again.
Like, yeah, they're like,
the lube towels.
Yeah.
So now, since you kind of started off in film, I think the first thing I knew you as was a stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
So how soon after did stand-up come in, or was stand-up kind of going parallel to starting a career in film?
Yeah, it was pretty parallel. When I first started, I was working. I did a lot of like docu-style stuff, so it was more in the Bigfoot realm. I did a Travel Channel show where this guy traveled the world and like drank different alcohols and learned about the culture, whatever. So I was doing like docu stuff like that, but at the same time getting into comedy. And so I started performing. I was doing a ton of stand-up, ton of improv, and sort of doing a dual. You know, I was working on these shows during the day, and then I had a sketch group where we were doing shows and filming sketches and all kinds of stuff at night. And so it was sort of building those two worlds together. And then the Nickelodeon prank show is, it was like the first time I was able to like really make a baby of those two worlds, which was awesome. I mean, that's the ideal to be able to, you know, I'm lucky that my quote unquote side hustle is a whole ass career. So, you know, I'm very grateful for that, that, you know, in between auditioning and writing and doing shows and things, I'm also able to like eat. So it was cool to make it a thing where I could also do that in a comedic way.
So with the prank show, so you did this for 2 seasons as the head writer. How hard is it to try to find, because there's been so many different prank shows, so from Punk'd, the Jamie Kennedy Experience, that were kind of big at least growing up. How did you find a way to kind of differentiate, to find your comedic voice kind of shine through on that?
This was fun because it was kids, so we had sort of those bowling lane bumpers where it was like we got to kind of stay in here, which made it fun and also kind of challenging. You know, you couldn't just, I'm like, if you've ever seen any of my comedy, it's very raunchy, it's very dark, so I couldn't really just do my normal style, so it was fun to sort of work that muscle. So we had this cool, like, you know, foundation where it had to be kid centric. And we never were like, we're pranking the kids, but the kids never looked silly or dumb. It was always the celebrity. So the premise is celebrities would come, we would put them in full prosthetic makeup, and they would play like insane substitute teachers. So we would basically, it's basically just writing character sketches. So we would come up with this insane character. We would come up with, you know, a few pranks for them to do to the kids, like some little things. And then, yeah, so it's sort of, I did one about Bigfoot. I made a Bigfoot one. So you sort of just kind of come up with characters and then build around that. But I think it did help that it was kid focused to sort of make us be able to like get, you know, be unique and different than every other, you know, million prank shows.
So was there a particular prank that stood out to you the most that you were just like, yep, yeah, this was like the best one that we could ever come up with?
Okay, I don't know. I'm not gonna say it's the best one, but one of my favorite ones is we had JoJo Siwa on the show, and I had pitched this truly for probably 2 full seasons. I had pitched the idea of a teacher who just was really sad that Pluto is no longer considered a planet. So that was really the whole premise, was that this teacher is obsessed with Pluto, was heartbroken that people no longer considered a planet. And so we were at the science museum and we did a thing where like the kids had balloons and they made their favorite planet. And anybody that didn't make Pluto, she would just pop their balloon and be like, try again. And so that was one of my favorites just because it was so dumb. And I had pitched it for so long and like was reworking it and trying to find a way because I just was like, this is the dumbest thing ever. And I just love it so much. And I have to make it work. So that was definitely a fan favorite. The Bigfoot one was fun because one of our producers, we got to like cover in hair, body hair, to be like, make him look like sort of maybe kind of Bigfoot-ish, to like mess with the kids. And then another really stupid one that I love is there's this one teacher where basically it was like he had just read a book that was like Teaching for Dummies. And so he was like trying to like do everything, and he read a chapter on an open door policy. So he took it literally, and so I had to have the art department like develop a door that he could just rip off the hinges. And he's like, it's always going to be open because there's no more door, whatever. And that was just, for me, I have the most fun with like really stupid small stuff like that, where I'm like, I can't believe that I came up with this ridiculous idea, and then many, many grown men have to build things and make it work and happen. So it was definitely a dream job for sure.
No, when it comes to sketches, I have always been in the camp of the dumber the better.
Yeah.
If it makes me laugh and follow it with that's so stupid. So that is like the perfect wheelhouse for me.
Perfect.
And
Yeah.
anytime I think it's just dumb enough, I'm like, how can I make this just slightly dumber
Yeah.
that it's almost unbelievable but still sticks there? And that's where it always kills me. And I'm a huge Conan fan, and I would always love it when Conan would do sketches and like you'd have birds or something, but you could just like see the fishing wire. Or like it was just on yarn where it was just so dumb. And I was like,
Yeah.
this is why I am staying up late, is for this comedy.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. If someone, that is really the success of if someone watches something I make or sees something, whatever, and they're just like, that's so stupid. And I'm like, yes. Hell
Yeah,
yeah.
I had one I made that was just cutting together trailer clips from the Avengers, and it was when Infinity War came out, but I changed it to Xfinity War because it was right when everything came out that Comcast and Xfinity were horrible to try to cancel the service with. And so it was the Avengers Xfinity War, and it's just them trying to cancel their cable.
I
So
love it.
that's all that it is, and it's so dumb. And I sent it to one of my friends who was a writer at Conan at the time. And he gave it the like, this is so stupid, it works. And I was like, all right, that's all I wanted to hear, is that it was so dumb it worked.
Yeah, love that. That's my jam, dude.
So for
That's why I
anybody who
have
wants
the
to
most fun with stuff.
watch your show with their kids too, it's called The Substitute. So it falls
Yes.
right in to exactly what you're doing. Then did any of the
Yeah.
kids ever catch on, like when you have some of these stars dressed up, did they catch on right away, or were they disguised well enough that the kids were like, is that JoJo
There was never really a time where the cover was blown completely or like immediately. There was time, so we had like camera hides, so there would be like a thing that looks like a garden shed, but in reality it's like a two-way mirror and we're filming through it to get a better angle of the kids or whatever. So we have these hides that are all around that look like trash cans, but there's actually like a camera guy in there filming. So there are times like that or where audio has to like hide mics in trees and under desks and like certain, so it was really only random times when kids would sort of like start to be like, something's off here, like something, this is just too insane, like this is wacky, whatever. But there was one sketch where we were at this farm and there was like a scene where it was Halloween themed episode, and so there was a scarecrow in the back of the class, and at some point when the teacher's like being really weird, the scarecrow comes to life. And this was during COVID, so we weren't able to like bring extra people on set, which was challenging but also very fun because then I got to be the scarecrow. So I'm standing in this scarecrow thing, full like costume, whatever, trying to stay perfectly still for like 20 minutes until we get to the point where I have my reveal. And that was one where like there was a couple times when kids would turn around and they'd be like, just like kind of staring at me like something, I don't know, this is, I don't know, something weird is weirding me out. And they turn around and I like couldn't move. So I'm like, oh, I have an itch on my leg or something. And then just be like, just turning and staring. But not usually, no. We were overall fairly successful with tricking them.
So outside of the show, do you like pulling pranks? I mean, especially as April Fool's Day just passed us, which is a day I have grown to hate just because people don't know how to actually do a joke. But do you like to pull pranks on people outside of the show?
I have always like I would get suspended in school all the time for doing pranks. Like I was a big prankster, and I have always been. I think as I've gotten older and maybe more as I've been paid to do it and turned it into a job, I don't do it as much. But I mean, I love a good stupid prank that doesn't like, doesn't hurt anyone. That's the fun thing about doing kids is like you're not, there's a fine line in prank where it's like you're being fucking cruel and an asshole and like really terrible and mean, And we never really had to like have that struggle and the substitute because it was kids, so we weren't able to do that, which helped. But I do a bit here and there. Also stupid things like my roommate. I bought 200 of these tiny little babies that go in like the Mardi Gras cakes. And so for the past like year, I've just been hiding them in places in my apartment for my roommate to find. And my favorite one is I froze one in an ice cube. So he like went to make a drink and there was a baby in an ice cube. So I enjoy doing stupid shit like that, like little things, but I don't know the last time I've really set up like a big prank. It's been a bit.
So now getting into stand up and writing comedy, who were some of your early influences that made you want to kind of go down this path?
It's a cliche for every musical comedian to say, but Bo Burnham always is just, I feel like, so incredibly smart and also has a, you know, the ability to take something so small and stupid and really lean into it. And I enjoy that a lot. So he definitely was, you know, at the top. Growing up, I watched a lot of Golden Girls. Okay. That was sort of like the original, like, comedic female image that I had of like that, you know, women can be funny and make funny shows and things. I have a Golden Girls tattoo right here of all the girls. And so that definitely was like an influence for sure. And then I mean, growing up, I watched a lot of Family Guy. I sort of was like, you know, the usual kid that just loved raunchy comedy and leaned into that as much as I could, really, and like dark shit.
Yeah, I love that. Like, how old were you when you started watching Family Guy? Because this is always, growing up in Utah, every kid's parent was like, you are not allowed to watch Family Guy. Or like, my parents tried to ban The Simpsons. That was never going to work. That felt
miserably.
But how old were you when you started kind of diving into more of the raunchy comedy?
Honestly, I was young. I didn't really, my parents weren't exactly parents. They didn't really, you know, it's not like they were paying attention to like, there were not really any rules about what I could watch. It was kind of like, you know, I was just doing my thing. So I sort of got away with watching whatever. So definitely too young, for sure. As an adult now, definitely too young. But I honestly, I don't even remember. I remember I taught my first grade class, everyone, I taught them the word cunt. And I got in trouble for it. I have a vivid memory of that. I have like a really bad memory because I also have epilepsy. So my brain is fried. But so I don't remember exact ages, but I do remember always sort of being too, watching things that are definitely inappropriate for my age.
I think that was kind of how it was for me unintentionally, because up until I was five, I was an only child. And so like my parents were watching it and it was like prime time. So was I. And I mean, I was probably the only 5-6-year-old whose favorite show probably at the time, aside from like Ghostbusters and Ninja Turtles, was In Living Color. And it's like, I was going to like first grade with a fire marshal Bill impression. So I get that being very early on of like, yeah, I can. But like, I remember walking to school as like a seventh grader, and one of my friends had gotten Adam Sandler's first few albums. And I remember listening to What the Hell Happened to Me and hearing like The Goat, and then like further on The Goats. And I had that entire thing memorized to a T. And I started trying to do The Goat's voice, and I'd always have kids at like lunch be like, no, do the goat thing. And all they ever wanted me to do was go, ah, fuck me in the goat ass. Like, that was all they wanted over and over and over again.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I don't know what it is, but yeah, that raunchy comedy as a kid just draws you in.
And then I loved it.
Learn as an adult where to draw that line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't. And I won't draw a line, and you can't make me.
So do you ever find yourself going back to some of those shows, though? And hearing a joke again, and you're like, oh, I laughed really hard at that as a kid, and I didn't even understand it.
Oh, for sure. I mean, even a much darker thing, but even just watching the doc that just came out about Nickelodeon and
The Quiet on the Set.
Quiet on the Set, like even seeing those jokes that we were like, oh, that's so funny and that's so silly. And then it's like, okay, that was much darker than we realized it was. I mean, I feel like that's kind of definitely always a consistent trend of watching stuff back and being like, I can't believe I watched that. Like, I can't believe I quoted that. Like, oh my God, like clutching my pearls as an adult where I'm like, oh, geez, I can't believe I said that in like sixth grade in class.
Oh yeah, there. I remember when my grandpa had taken us when I was in like sixth grade, getting ready to go into middle school. My grandpa has a very raunchy sense of humor, and had taken us up to Alaska fishing, and just late at night around the campfire, like all of his friends just getting drunk, making jokes, and they're all these just like very raunchy hunter gatherer type guys. And I'm just sitting there laughing along as this like little innocent 11, 12 year old. And my parents, when they are watching these videos, are like, do you understand what they're saying? And like, I had to repeat things back. They're like, no, don't say that. That's okay. And then now I can't even remember some of them, but I just remember like my parents very much just kind of being appalled. Like, yeah, you can't say those things. Like, your grandpa has a filthy, filthy mind, and you can't go around school saying things like that. And yeah,
that group of people sounds like some big Bigfoot guys.
Yeah. Without a doubt, probably half of them. I mean, my grandpa definitely not, but some of his friends, without a doubt, some of them may have been mistaken for Bigfoot. So.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, if you guys are ever in northern Utah and somebody says they saw him, it might have just been one of my grandpa's friends on a drunken wander. So
yeah,
there's a good chance of it. So one of the other shows I was very intrigued on you consulting on. Everybody always has like their kind of fun thing in their bios: writer, actor, producer. I've never seen anybody that has beatboxer.
Yeah, that is a thing.
Where did this come from?
I mean, I grew up in South Florida, so I was always very in hip-hop culture. I always loved it, and you know, dabbled whatever, and my first like improv team in LA was a hip-hop improv team. So we would do songs and scenes. It was long form, so basically instead of swiping a scene, we would pull a line from one of the scenes and make like a chorus. So it would be like, my favorite one to reference is someone says like, well, what happens in Thailand stays in Thailand. And then someone on the back line will be like, ever to air. And then we start making a song like, what happens in Thailand stays in Thailand. Then that song is what sort of leads us into our next scene. So that was really where I started like getting more into beatboxing and rapping actively. And then, yeah, it's sort of has become a thing I dabble in. Yeah, I was on, I assume you're talking about Drop the Mic on TBS and TNT, where my title was a celebrity beatbox coach, which should not be a job. should not be something anyone ever makes money doing. But yeah, I would go in with rap coaches and we would coach celebrities for their rap battles. And so I would go in and beatbox. We do on the show, we would use beatboxing because a lot of people don't have rhythm. And so we could sort of correct it as we go to help them where, you know, if they're off beat or whatever, we can, you know, be more flexible, much more than just a song where it's like Dr. Phil is just not on beat with this song right now. So that was definitely very, very fun. But yeah, absolutely money I should not have ever been able to make.
Was there, I mean, you mentioned Dr. Phil. Was there ever a celebrity guest that as you're trying to get them to get this rhythm down or get a beat down, that was just impossible to make it work?
I mean, I say Dr. Phil because he sure was a tricky case. but there's certain people where they would even be like so nervous or bad at it that like a rap coach and a beatbox coach would go to their house like the day before to the shoot to really like train with them. And I never had to do that. But I mean, yeah, everyone there was definitely some pleasant surprises. Like, we had a battle that was Shaggy versus Shaggy. So it was Matthew Lillard who plays Shaggy, and then Shaggy, the actual singer. And so they battled against each other, and I could not get Shaggy to practice. Like, he just was like, oh yeah, I got it, whatever, whatever. But Matthew Lillard came in, and he was like fucking ready to go, dude. He was like, I'm doing, I'm ready, let's rap, whatever. And he ended up fucking like murking the real Shaggy because the real Shaggy kept fucking up and Matthew Lillard didn't. And it was like so satisfying to me because I was like, see, man, you should have just let me run through it with you once or twice. You should have. But he was like, like, oh, I'm a musician, I got it, whatever. So that was a fun one for me just because I'm petty and I was like, hey, there you go.
Plus Matthew Lillard, everything I've ever heard of him is just great. So that I love hearing that
Yeah.
he was so eager to do it and then beats the actual Shaggy. That's even better.
Yeah, for sure. There definitely was the majority of people that I worked with were like very, very cool. At the time I was on, I think maybe we were or had just finished or something. But Watson used to have an improv team where we would improvise a Kevin Smith movie.
Okay.
And so I ended up they did a Kevin Smith Jay and Silent Bob episode where they battled each other. And so I got to go coach Kevin Smith, which was very cool because
That's
I'm
amazing.
sure I immediately texted Watson and was like, oh God, like, it's our dude, he's here. And that was a really fun one because he just randomly throughout the day he would just walk out of his dressing room and just go, Janine, Janine. And I'd have to run and he'd be like, let's practice. And I'd be like, okay, yeah, sure.
Yeah, when Kevin Smith comes out and wants to practice his beatboxing and rapping, yeah, you got to just
Yeah.
drop everything and go. Yeah,
I was like, yeah, sure, man. Yeah, man, whatever you want.
I didn't even know Watson had done that, which it's funny. Watson and I both have like such a long improv background, and we have never improvised together. So I mean, other than like
Really?
doing any live shows, I think when we were filming Take Me Out, God, like 8 9 years ago now. I think we were waiting for somebody to get to set and we were killing time just with some improv games. That is possibly it. So I don't know
Yeah.
how we never have, but yeah, as you said that, I was like, had no idea. And then it dawned on me like, yeah, he and I have never improvised together. But I
Yeah.
want to see some improvised Kevin Smith movies now.
It was fun. It was fun. We had a team and we sort of developed this form that I will never be able to remember because my brain is oatmeal, but it was fun. And before that, I had never seen any Kevin Smith movies. So when I first started, I was like, I don't know anything. And so it was fun to be able to like watch them, understand like the format, some like shticks and some things that, are patterns throughout the projects and be able to pull those into improv scenes, which was very fun. But it felt cool, full circle moment to be able to coach him
That's awesome.
for that, yeah.
So now I know people will ask when they listen to this. So as you kind of mentioned, like with stand up running parallel to working on shows, how did you transition? Because people always want to know how to get into writing roles and things like that. How long did it take you from going into stand up and starting working in shows to being able to be a head writer on The Substitute and to start getting writing jobs?
I've been doing comedy for about 10 years now. So it's like through that long process. I was able to get that gig because I had done so much producing in other types of TV. And they also knew that I was like a working performing comic that did shows and has the comedy chops and knows the comedy world. So it was able to like be an extra added bonus for that. But it was me basically building a full career in producing and production, and then sort of being able to use the comedy as a perk to be able to be on a different type of show as like, consulting, writing, producing.
So really, it really goes down to, and it's something I tell a lot of people is, you just have to keep going at it. So you start at the bottom and you get those 10,000 hours. So it's
100%.
I used to roll my eyes when I would hear people mention the 10,000 hours. And then the more and more and more I started looking at it, I was like, ah, it's a real fucking thing.
Yeah, it's like, oh, fuck.
It's a
Yeah.
lot of power. It's a lot of time, but it does start to pay off. I mean, like you said, going on 10 years of stand up, like it's a lot of hard work. And I know for me, when I started in stand up, things were going well, but I quickly realized it wasn't for me, just because I liked the immediacy. Like I was writing satire, a lot of satire at the time, and I was like, yeah, that's where I need to focus on my niche. Like I would do stand up and I would record every set, and I could hear myself actively getting bored on stage because I had done the same joke every time. And so it's like I quickly realized, that's not my vein. And so it's the work that it takes to be a good stand-up like yourself, to keep that repetition over and over, to find those beats, it's something I admire so much, that to put in 10 years of it and to continue, it is such hard work, and that's why it pays off like this.
I think it's interesting because I actually don't. I started in stand up, like I started doing traditional stand up, and in the same way, I was like, "This is fucking boring. I'm going up and I'm saying the same thing every night. I'm slightly tweaking it, and it's like I don't want to keep saying the same thing over and over." So, for a while now, my comedy and stand up shows are all fully improvised. So it's I do live looping, so I layer on top of myself where I beatbox and freestyle rap, and do fully improvised comedic songs that are based off audience suggestion and very interactive with the audience. So, yeah, I also got so fucking over it of just like writing things and saying the same thing every night. I was like, this is not fun. This is a fucking snooze fest. And that's how I sort of developed and started doing like the looping and the more fun version of being able to, do comedy and performing, just in a it just allowed me to be more weird and absurd, and not as traditional, and I just have so much more fun doing that.
I love that. I've seen a few clips of the looping stuff that you've done. I know I just barely saw one that either you had posted on TikTok or that Watson had shared with me of part of what you had done at Mel's a little while back.
Yeah.
So, and it's such a unique concept of doing that. And after we just did a live show last weekend, like I had said to my wife driving home, I was just like, if I ever was to get back into stand up, like I don't think I could ever go to writing. It would have to be 100% improvised crowd work. Like I couldn't go back to
Yeah.
writing a set. But I loved knowing that like others have kind of gotten to that point where it's like, no, there's other ways to go out and do stand up and just to be able to have fun. And I think, creating looping, the only other person I can even think of doing anything different than that is Moses Storm, and it's paid off so well.
Yeah.
Moses adding video and things like that into it. So I love people not so much reinventing stand up, but just finding different ways to be able to get on stage and be able to be funny.
Yeah, and I love the Moses. I just saw his last cult show, and something I love is he, yeah, is very absurdist. It's very like malleable. It's like, it's gonna be different every time he interacts with the audience. You have like the audience sort of has like a certain amount of control over the show where they get to decide like, where it goes, and that's kind of like they have power in that way. And that's fun for me to sort of play with that and also to like take it away from them. I have a lot of fun making like diss tracks or making like a full audience say like, fuck John, and then we all rap it together and we're screaming fuck John to some dude in the audience that said something stupid. And that shit is just so fun to me because I just am like, I just get to, it's literally like trolling on stage. And everyone likes it because it's fun and it sounds silly and we're all having a grand time. But I'm like, I'm really just like making fun of you.
It's a good fun way to do it, and especially when you're at a comedy show, people know the risk. They might become part of the bit. And
For
it's
sure.
always fun to watch them have that moment where you can tell they are so uncomfortable, and then they realize you're not going to let up. They're either going to lean into it and just be part of it. And sometimes it's almost sometimes more fun to watch them just sink lower and just like, please take the spotlight off of me. And so I would love to watch you do an entire diss track on somebody in the audience.
Thank you. Yeah, it's very fun. Especially now, it's a weird time in comedy with crowd work clips and sort of changing the full dynamic of what shows are and how audiences behave and act and how heckling has become a very considered normal thing. And comics hate it because they have this routine. It's very, muscle memory. It's they know what to say, they know how to say it when. For me, I fucking love hecklers. That's my bread and butter, dude. Because it's like, say something, whatever. I am gonna make everything about you, and I'm gonna make this whole room like sing that you suck. And there's nothing you could do about it. You just have to sit here and listen to it. And I think that's really fun for me.
It's a fun power move too, where it's just like, cool, fuck you, now we're gonna have fun.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, well, maybe you won't do that next time to some other comic that it's gonna piss off.
They're gonna have just PTSD of going to any stand-up show and just being like, they might sing about me. Everybody might sing about me. I can't do anything. I have to be in line.
Yeah, have to behave. And then he'll go to 600 more comedy shows and be like, no one sings. This is, that was weird.
They're just gonna seek you out again after those 600, just so they can go and say something again.
Yeah, they've been thinking about it for 2 years. And they're like, oh, I'm gonna get her. I'm gonna get her good.
So, Janine, it's been great chatting with you. I'm glad that we had the time. I'm glad that you had a little bit of free time because you work like crazy. And so I was
Yeah.
able to make this work. I'm very excited for us to dive into Demonetize. Hopefully within the next few months here we'll be on set
Yeah,
and
I'm stoked.
made, because it's a very, very fun movie that I think people are going to enjoy. And even though we've kind of loosely talked about it, do you want to tell people kind of just the loose premise of what Demonetize is about?
Sure. Yeah, so it's these two sort of failed ghost hunters. They had a ghost hunter show, and they used to be hot shots in the ghost hunting world. And they're sort of looking for their next thing to prove that ghosts are real. They accidentally discover that these spirits at this house have a passionate hate for influencers. They just really upset them and really get it going. So they decide that they're gonna just invite a bunch of the top influencers into this house, and have a competition of like, oh, can you survive one night for money, whatever. And then it all just goes to, some crazy shit happens.
Yeah, it is so much fun. When Watson first told me the ideas, we were in post on Bundy Manor, I laughed so hard. And then I read, I think, like the fifth draft. I know I've got like the fifth draft sitting here. I've got several others sitting around me. And already, just with some of the new stuff, like when Watson had been like, hey, throw me some punch-up jokes for this one section. And even just going through that of where it was going to go, after like you, him, and Josh had kind of sat down and gone through it, I am so excited to read the next draft of what you guys have
Yeah,
come
it's
up
fun.
with, because it just keeps getting wilder and sillier in areas. And for a horror comedy, I feel more and more confident with each read that there's moments that are going to scare the shit out of people and make people just laugh their asses off. And
Yeah, hopefully.
I think it's going to be such a fun dynamic. There was nothing better than when we would be at festivals for Bundy Manor or at special screenings, and hearing people burst out laughing at certain parts that we were like, yeah, it's like that, like feeling that in the theater. And Demonetize, I think you and Watson have written just such a fun script that it's going to do that even
Thank
more.
you. Yeah.
So
Let's
yeah,
hope so. It's
it's going
fun.
to be
I'm
a lot of fun.
excited for sure.
So, well, where can everybody find you to be able to keep up with you and see what you're doing?
Yeah. On all social media, it's J9 underscore Hogan. You could find me on, Instagram, TikTok, all the things. If you're in LA, I do shows around town. Check out my social media. I always promote and post it on Instagram. And yeah, I mean, that's sort of where you'll find everything. I do some music here and there, and yeah, so that's really the spot. You'll be able to check it all out and chat.
Awesome. Well, thank you again for taking the time, and yeah, we will chat soon.
Yeah, thank you so much.
You bet. We'll see you.
All right, talk to you later.